And this entire line of research came out of a research project that I did jointly for the U.S. General Accounting Office. And so we had access to a lot of resources, especially a lot of data resources that we normally, as academics, wouldn't be able to afford to purchase because the data are quite expensive. And here's kind of an abstract of the talk. It turns out that the market for motor fuel, and in particular, I'm thinking of like gasoline, the fuel that you use in your automobile. The market for gasoline is heterogeneous in a number of ways. It's heterogeneous first because there's geographic separation. Right. There's separation between, at the retail level, between where gas stations are located. There's separation where the refineries are located. There's a lot of geographic separation. And markets, even if markets are very close together, they can still be separated because they could use different types of fuel. And it turns out that in some places, in particular in the U.S., there may be as many as 40 different types of gasoline being sold at one time in one country. And these different types of gasoline can't be substituted for one another in many cases. So, you could think that, let's see, the simplest way of illustrating this would be that there's motor gasoline that contains lead, or there used to be leaded gasoline, and then there was the unleaded gasoline. Right? And if you had a car that was unleaded fuel only, then you're not supposed to put the leaded gasoline in it. And so, clearly there's two different types of gasoline, and they're not substitutable for one another. Well, there are many other ways that gasoline is differentiated, and the way it's differentiated is due to some environmental regulations. So sometimes gasoline will have some additives in it so that, let's say, in the summertime when it's very hot, that it doesn't evaporate very rapidly. Okay. And the additives in the gasoline, let's say in one city, may be different than the additives in the gasoline in a different city, and so they're not substitutable. So this is another way that there's heterogeneity in the market. Now, what we do in this paper is we examine the level of gasoline prices across different cities, and we examine the volatility in gasoline prices across cities to try to separate out, what explains high gasoline prices in certain cities. Is it that the city itself is isolated, or is it that the city is using a special type of gasoline, and that's why the price is high? Or is it a combination of these factors? And the whole reason that we began to study this is that I think in the U.S., a lot of congressmen from states where the gasoline prices were high were very concerned that, the citizens in their state were paying higher prices than other people. And so, as congressmen, they wanted the General Accounting Office to study this. Now, the regulation of automobile emissions has a long history. And it previously was the case that almost all of the regulations pertaining to the emissions of automobiles, they all focused on the automobile itself. They didn't focus on the fuel so much. Okay? And so automobile engines had catalytic converters added to them when unleaded fuel was introduced. And other technology applied to the engines so that the engine itself would produce less emissions. Okay? But the focus around, recently, in the last decade or 15 years, the focus has changed from the engine, from the automobile itself, to the fuels. And so the regulations, the environmental regulations, are now focusing on the motor fuel because we've essentially reached the limit for what the advances in technology are going to give us for reducing emissions of the automobile. Now, previously, there were only essentially two different blends of gasoline. For a given type of motor fuel, there'd be a blend for the winter and a blend for the summer. And then in a city in North America, there's a much bigger variation in temperature between the summer and the winter. So in the summer, in places it can be, let's say, 30 or 35 degrees. And so the motor fuel was designed so it doesn't evaporate too rapidly. And in the winter, when it can be minus 30 degrees Celsius or minus 35 Celsius, the fuel has to be designed so it does evaporate a little more rapidly, so it doesn't freeze. Okay. So there's essentially we're only two gasoline blends. After about 1990, in the U.S., the federal government required areas that had a lot of pollution to use a kind of a federally specified type of motor fuel. And this type of motor fuel, it's referred to as the RFG, or reformulated gasoline. And that's mandated if it's being used in a city that doesn't meet the air quality standards. Now, for cities that do meet some threshold of air quality standards, but are still relatively polluted, they're allowed to use a special blend of fuel so that the fuel meets the environmental standard. But if they don't have to use the formula specified by the federal government, instead, they could, come up with their own formula, okay? And so, which really means that the local industry, the oil refining industry, together with the state in the United States, they could jointly agree to produce a special kind of fuel that doesn't pollute very much. And the reason they might want to do that is that the local refinery is configured to produce certain types of fuels, so they could produce that fuel in a less costly way than producing the federal formula of reformulated gasoline. At least that's the most charitable way of explaining this. And so, some areas are allowed to use special blends of fuels. Okay. Now, a special blend of fuel is what's called in the industry a boutique motor fuel. And it's a boutique motor fuel in the same way if you went into some, special clothes designer store. You call it a boutique because they have special designs. They don't have the same thing that every place else has, right? It's a boutique motor fuel. It's sort of a customized formula of motor fuel. Okay? It's, and it may be only used in one city or in one region. Okay? Now, and the motor fuel is special because it'll contain certain oxygenates. And I'll explain briefly what all this jargon means. But it contains certain oxygenates which reduce vehicular emissions, carbon monoxide in particular. They can contain some additives that reduce what's called the rate vaporization pressure, and that's how quickly the gasoline evaporates. And then it can have a special blend of fuel because some toxic chemicals are removed from that fuel because that particular area doesn't meet air quality guidelines. It needs to have a more stringent blend of fuel with less toxics in it than some other area. So we don't really have to know what all this means, but just briefly. An oxygenate is some additive in a fuel that essentially makes it burn more cleanly. Okay. So you can kind of imagine if you were lighting up a barbecue and you dumped a bunch of lighter fluid on the barbecue and you threw a match on it, then all this black smoke comes up, right? Because a lot of the fuel was not completely combusted, okay? And if you were thinking of an engine for, you know, like in your automobile, it's the same thing. It's that if somehow you could put more oxygen in to the fuel when it burned, there'd be less black smoke coming out the tailpipe. Right? So the more completely the fuel burns, the lower the emissions will be. Okay. There's another chemical called this MTBE, and it's a particular type of oxygen that's been used in fuels in many places. And it's used mainly because it's convenient. It's a very convenient way of making the fuel burn more cleanly. Some oxygenists are actually, it's more complicated to add them into the fuel. For example, if alcohol is used as the oxygenant, well, alcohol attracts moisture, and so if you're going to put alcohol into the fuel, you have to do it right before the fuel goes in the truck to be taken out to the gas station, so it complicates things. And so if alcohol, for this, so ethanol, is used as the oxygenant, it can make things more complicated. Okay? And this other term is this rate vaporization pressure, which is essentially, you know, how quickly the fuel evaporates. Okay. Now there's various types of motor fuel. The standard reformulated gasoline blend is called the RFG. Okay. And so this is the kind of the federally mandated special, especially clean burning gasoline. Okay. And this is used in areas that don't meet the air quality regulations. In areas that do meet the air quality regulations and that don't need to use any special type of fuel, what they use is just called conventional fuel. And that's more or less the gasoline that's sold everywhere in the world. With, you know, in the absence of any special regulations, they just be using conventional motor fuel. So like the oil refineries in Singapore that refine for export, they will export, you know, conventional unleaded gasoline. It's very standard. And the unleaded gasoline that ships from Europe to the East Coast of North America will also typically be, often be conventional gasoline. Now there's other types of fuel. There's a special type of reformulated gasoline that's called a CARB RFG. And that's the reformulated gasoline that's used in California. And that's, I'd say it's the most stringent blend of reformulated gasoline. It's more costly to produce than the reformulated gasoline that's mandated by the federal government. It's a state in the U.S., California, always seems to be on the leading edge of, you know, environmental regulations and so on. Special reformulated gasoline that's used, that's specified by the European Union, and it's almost the same thing as the California reformulated gas. And a few places in the U.S. use gasoline that's low sulfur gasoline. Okay, and in particular, around the Atlanta area, there's a whole region that's required to use low sulfur gasoline. So, please.
Which kind of gasoline that you just mentioned is the most expensive one? And if you rank, which one ranks as the most expensive for the cheapest?
The California reformulated gasoline that uses ethanol is the most expensive to produce. And after that, you know, reformulated gasoline that uses ethanol as the oxygenate is the most expensive. And then if it uses the MTBE as the oxygenate, it's less expensive. The lower the rate vaporization pressure, the higher the cost.
very expensive ones that are very economically feasible in terms of producing. Have any idea about that?
Well, we're talking cents per gallon for extra cost. By far the largest component of the price of motor fuel is the crude oil. I mean, that's probably more than 50% of the cost of producing it. So you know, at the margin, these are relatively small increments, I would say. And you know, they were federally mandated, so a lot of it turned out that a lot of small refiners went out of business just at this time when they had to start producing this more expensive type of fuel, largely because if they reconfigured their oil refinery, it would be too expensive for them to compete. And so it's not that it's too costly on the demand side, but maybe for some of the small producers, it's too costly. But I'll get to that. So, what makes this story interesting, okay, so I'm just giving you the background about, you know, something about the motor gasoline, there's different types of gasoline, there's different ways you can put the inputs together to make gasoline, okay? Now, you can ask, well, you know, how could you end up with this situation, like where you have a country like the U.S., and you have, you know, 40 different types of gasoline being sold at the same time. But it seems like a really odd way to design something, right? I mean, if you were the central planner, would you design the system so you have all these oil refineries, each one making a different type of gasoline, sold to a different area, and that if there were some supply disruption, that you couldn't use this gasoline in this other area, right? It seems very odd that anyone would organize an industry to look like this. And so we have to say, well, you know, how did it get like this? And it got like this because in the U.S., there's the federal jurisdiction, okay, and then each state is, you know, largely independent. And so the state has its own jurisdiction over most matters, and over some matters, the federal government has jurisdiction. Right? There are a lot of federations that have the same conflict, right? Where, in Canada, provinces will be battling the federal government, right? Because they want to do it their way, and the federal government wants to impose something on all of the provinces. And in the U.S., you know, it's the same type of conflict in a confederation. Well, so the federal government, you know, in areas that didn't meet certain air quality standards, they imposed this federal blend of reformulated gasoline. Okay. And individual states, they had an incentive to not use the federal reformulated gasoline. Okay. Now, states that had air quality that wasn't too severe, they were allowed to use a different type of gasoline. Okay, so if they could use some alternative blend of gasoline to the federal blend, okay, they were permitted to do this. Okay? And the reason that they would do this is that they wanted to use a blend of gasoline that was less costly. Right? The politicians in each state want to get credit for gasoline prices in their state being lower than in some other state, if it's a result of state regulation. Okay. So, a lot of states were able to design special blends that met the air quality requirements, but didn't require as much of the expensive oxygenates and other additives that were mandated in the federal blend of gasoline. So, you know, this is the reason that each individual state, if they could, they tried to use a different blend of gasoline. Okay. And then the states, you know, immediately got credit for any reductions in the emissions. Okay. So, the federal government had to provide guidance to the individual states. Okay. And I think in probably, strictly speaking, when a state applies to the federal, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency for permission to use a special blend of gasoline, the EPA could, in principle, say, no, you can't use it. You have to use federal reformulated gasoline. But in practice, they never did that. I mean, any time an individual state went to the federal government and said, you know, our state, together with our local refiners, have come up with a special blend of gasoline that meets the environmental requirements for our city or region, and we want to use this instead, they always got permission to do that. And so there was this federal guidance, but essentially, you know, no application for a special blend of gasoline was ever denied. This map gives an idea, it will give you an idea of, you know, the areas where special blends of fuel are used.
There are a lot more than this. There are, you know, 40 different variations of motor fuel. But just looking at the map, we'll see that, well, you know, most of the geography doesn't have to use special blends of gasoline. But like, you know, every place in the developed world, almost everyone lives in a city. So no one lives in all these places. So it's not very important. When you look at the fuel, there's special gasoline, special blend of gasoline. This little place here has a special blend. This has a different special blend. This has a special blend. Special blend is a different special blend. But the reason they're different is they're in different states. On two different sides of the river, the gasoline is different if you substitute one for the other. If you look at it, you think, why would you ever make your gasoline consumption pattern look like that? And it's just the result of individual states having an incentive not to use federal gasoline, and then they work with their local refiners. Now, when you look at this map, I don't know if you see what I see, but when I look at this, I see a lot of islands. I see little islands, like up here, that are very geographically isolated, because all the areas around them use a different kind of fuel. If you were up here, well, places close to you often use different types of fuel. And if you were just sitting here with the red type of fuel, all the cities around you use different types of fuel. So if you look at the map and you think of it, there are all these islands where it's special fuel for you. Well, what would happen if the pipeline was shipped gasoline from the Gulf Coast up to the city, if that pipeline was broken for a week? The compressor went out, there was an explosion or something. Well, what's going to happen to the price of fuel here? If they're isolated in this way, they can't just get fuel from this other state. They just can use a different type of oxygen, and legally it's not allowed. They're not permitted to use that fuel. When we look at the map, which is us, you know, the way this special fuel use has evolved, it's going to result in this pattern, this system, where if you have any supply disruption, the price is going to get very high. And if you have a supply disruption, it's probably going to persist for quite some time. And there's not much scope for geographic arbitrage. Right? Where, you know, if there was some gasoline station, you know, down the street, and if they doubled the price of their fuel, the drivers would just go somewhere else. But here, it's difficult
for
The state regulator, together with the local refining industry, designed that blend of fuel for that place. There'd be some places use the blend of fuel that only we can, in more cases than anywhere else, in California, and then some states will use a fuel that this is really a derivative of this fuel. And some states will use a fuel that is a special fuel that is used over a very wide area. And so, you know, when I look at the map, I think there's got to be some way to test the hypothesis about, you know, what's important here. If it's the cost of refining the fuel, so that's production cost estimation. Is it that some places are geographically isolated? Right? So I don't have on the map here. I don't have Alaska. I have prices for Alaska. And so it would just make sense. Of course, gasoline in Alaska is going to cost more. But it's refined here, shipped up there. Of course, it's going to cost some of it. Is it how far you are from the refining industry that extracts the car? Is it a transportation car? Or is it the individual components of the fuel? Or is it that your market is isolated because you use a special kind of fuel and there are very few substitutes for it? So, for example, if you were down here in Texas, and they use this yellow fuel, which is it's a quite restrictive blend of fuel, pretty expensive to refine. But just looking at the picture here, it's known that if there were some kind of a pipeline out in one of these canyons, the price of fuel is really because they can get the fuel from all sorts of other sources of the car. Plus, they're right next to the Gulf Coast, all the refining. But if you were somewhere else, like if you were here, and then there was some supply disruption, it could really complicate things. So, I like maps. But I think just looking at the map, you get all sorts of ideas that the way this fuel use has evolved, it may be problematic. And this isn't the result of some design. It wasn't designed that there would be all these different fuels. It's just the way it happened. Now, I'll say more. Now, this map shows places in the U.S. that don't meet the ozone standards. And the only reason I put this up, ozone is one of the things that, one of the measures of pollution. And so in some areas, they will have to use a special fuel because there's too much ozone. And so if the ozone level is not being attained, we know that these are places where special fuel use is going to be continued. And so these are places where there's a 1 hour standard, a 4 hour standard, and this is where all of them are both made about that. I mean, these are places, you might think of as the most polluted places in the U.S. for not meeting the ozone standards. And so when we look at this, my only point for having this slide is you can't say, fuels are getting cleaner, polluted cities, around the world, in the more industrial, the post-industrial kind of world, are getting cleaner because there's less heavy industry, there's more environmental regulation. You can't say, oh, well, things are getting better so that we don't even need to use special fuels anymore. It's really the other way around. There's lots of places that don't meet a lot of standards, and so the use of these fuels isn't going to disappear. If anything, the non-attainment of these ozone standards is going to exacerbate the problem. So with the landscape I painted so far, let's look at the supply side, okay? Because on the demand side, there's special fuels, and they're primarily for automobile use. So we know what the demand side looks like. On the supply side, if we look not just at the refining side, but at the whole supply chain, well, what I do later will make a lot of sense. Okay? So the areas where the consumption takes place are geographically separated from the areas where the refining takes place. And the gasoline is usually transported by truck or by pipeline. Okay? And certain regions are net producers of fuel. Certain regions are net consumers of fuel. Okay? So in the U.S., the Gulf Coast is, kind of a net production region. Okay? And, it ships fuel to most other areas of the country. The west coast of the U.S. is generally isolated from the rest of the country. Okay? So in the U.S., we get this picture where the type of fuel that's used in different places is different. Right. And then where it's being refined is kind of centrally located in a couple of places, and then some parts of the country are kind of isolated from other parts of the country. Now, this map shows where the main refineries are located. Those are the green dots. And then these other lines, the blue and the red, those show where the major pipelines are. And essentially, the bigger the line, the higher the capacity of the pipeline. So, if we look at this, we see that the refining industry is largely concentrated in the Gulf Coast, and that there's other refineries scattered around. Okay? And different refineries often will make different types of gasoline. Okay? And it's not always the case that the gasoline that's used in a particular area is refined by the refinery that's nearby. It could be refined by some other refinery. Okay. And so, kind of when we look at this here, this is essentially what the supply chain looks like for the industry. And this kind of just gives us a picture that, there's a lot of shipment of petroleum throughout the U.S. The Gulf Coast is a net, a net exporter, and the East Coast is a net importer, and it's being shipped up to the Midwest, and some goes to California. And so there's a lot of refined gasoline that gets shipped around the U.S. It's not the case that the local demand is met by a local refinery. It's not at all like that. A huge amount of volume of fuel being shipped. So when refineries had to start making these new types of fuel, they had to spend a lot of money upgrading their refineries. Okay? It turns out it's more complicated to refine cleaner fuel than dirtier fuel. Okay? And there's some evidence that the refiners that survived this upgrading are more efficient than they used to be. Okay. But I think this is largely because a lot of refineries went out of business, especially the smaller refineries. So the refineries that are left are the ones you would recognize as the big names in the oil and gas industry. The Exxons, Chevron, Mobil, they're the big names. And the small independent refineries, but a lot of them have just, they've exited the industry. Okay. There's also been changes in the market for the components that are added to the gasoline to make it a special blend. And there's a lot more importation of these special products, the lighter products, the ones that make the fuel more cleaner burning, from Europe into the U.S. And the reason I point this out is that the supply chain, it's not just within the U.S., but it's becoming more complicated. The supply chain is getting longer, but it's actually importing lighter products from Europe. And so the supply chain for making motor fuel in the U.S. includes this importation of products from refineries in Europe. And in the U.S., there's a net shortage of refining capacity for gasoline. So a lot of motor gasoline in the U.S. actually comes from Europe. Because Europe has, they have essentially excess refining capacity for gasoline, and they have a shortage of refining capacity for distillate fuel, diesel fuel, distillate fuels. Now, what this means, a lot of this, one way to interpret this is that the capacity of the whole supply chain is being reduced. And it's being reduced directly because there are more types of fuel being produced. Let me give you an example. If, let's say, I have a refinery and it's, let me go back. It'll help my example. If I've got a refinery, and my refinery is down here, and I'm shipping to the city to come here, and when I ship fuel to your city, it is a special fuel, and it has MTBEs, and oxygen that's just put in the refinery. And that fuel is only used in your city. And then after your fuel, inside the pipeline, potentially something that separates the fuel, it's called a pig. And then behind that, there will be another batch of fuel. Take a picture if you had a straw, and you put liquid in the straw, and then you put, some grape in there or something, and then you put some more liquid in, and then you put another piece of the grape or some more liquid, and then you have something separating the fuel. If each load of fuel is different, well, that fuel is an offloader here, and it comes to an offloader, it's very comfortable because that's how much we're allowed in for that load of fuel. There are good stories about a load of fuel going from one place to another. They can have a storage tank with enough capacity for the fuel. So they actually have to ship the fuel 300 or 400 miles down the pipeline, put it into a truck, and bring it back to them. Because you can't just stop the pipeline. Once you have things in the pipeline going, put more fuel in, it keeps coming out the other end. And so you can see that there's no distance. Shipping fuel from one place to another are much more complicated when you have a bunch of different types of fuel, because the different types of fuel can't be mixed together. If they're mixed together, it's going to contaminate one of them. For example, there are some things you can mix together. If you were shipping the regular gasoline instead of the high octane or the premium blend of gasoline, well, if you mix those together, that's okay, because anyone who buys regular gasoline isn't going to complain if you give them better gasoline, right? But if you have gasoline with different components in it, and they get mixed together, it contaminates all of the gasoline. So it's in this way that the whole capacity of the supply chain has been reduced. Now, at the same time, if all of this has been happening, the size of the wholesale market is shrinking. Again, because there are so many more different types of gasoline, the wholesale market for each one of them is getting smaller, right? So the buyers of gasoline have fewer sources of supply, fewer wholesale markets. Retailers have fewer sources of supply. And so, you know, it's a result of this proliferation of different types of gasoline. The whole market for motor fuels has been changing. So now we'll get to the part where we do some data analysis. We have data on wholesale gasoline prices from 99 cities across the U.S. And so for each city, we have the weekly price of wholesale gasoline from December 2000 through October of 2004. And what we have is our sample has all of the cities on the major pipelines, all of the largest cities in most states, okay? And we have cities that use special blends of gasoline and cities that use conventional gasoline. So we've got a sample that includes everything. Okay? And we have, you know, cities from, you know, every kind of contiguous region in the United States. So, rather than putting a bunch of tables, I've just kind of summarized the descriptive results. As you might expect, the highest fuel prices are usually in cities that are somehow very isolated. They're in cities that use a special brand of gasoline that's not widely available. If they use a special brand of gasoline that is more costly to make, like the California gasoline, or if it's a city that's very far away from a refining center. You know, if you're in Alaska, let's say. And all of this is, you know, exactly what we would expect. There's nothing new here. Another thing you could do, just in examining the data, we need to ask, well, you know, where are the high prices for fuel? Well, if you look at the cities with the highest prices, it turns out that, you know, 16 of the 20 cities with the highest prices are cities that use special fuels. And those are fuels that are particularly stringent. Okay, the blend is one that you can't easily substitute away from. Okay. And so, you know, these are fuels where, you know, they're unique to that city. Okay. Now, you can also say, well, you know, where are the lowest prices found? Well, they're typically found in cities that are close to major refining centers. Okay. Even though they might use a special fuel. And so this should sort of, you know, hint that maybe it's not the cost of refining the fuel, but it's that the place that uses the fuel is somehow it's isolated, you know, so it's this little island of demand, and you can't easily find substitutes for the fuel that has to be used there. Now, gasolines that have ethanol in them typically have higher prices, okay? And the reason for this, if I kind of started to mention before, is that it's not that ethanol is so expensive, that right now in the U.S. there's a huge glut of ethanol. You know, a whole bunch of farmers, you know, started growing crops just so they could make ethanol from the crop. And it turned out that so many farmers did it that there's this huge oversupply of ethanol. Okay? The ethanol is not that expensive. It's that the ethanol absorbs water rapidly. That's what alcohol does. And so you can't put the ethanol in the gasoline when you refine it. If you do, the ethanol absorbs water and it's corrosive. And so, you know, it corrodes the pipeline. Okay? And so the ethanol has to be put in the gasoline at the same time the gasoline is being put in the tanker truck to take it out to the gasoline stations. So it's the logistics that makes gasoline with ethanol more expensive. In the U.S., a number of places have switched from the MTBE, is the oxygen, to using ethanol, largely for environmental reasons. MTBE is, it's been shown to cause cancer. It has other, bad effects like that. And so a lot of states have moved away from it. And so, this partially explains why some places have higher fuel prices, because they use ethanol. Now, for conventional gasoline, the cities that have the lowest prices typically just use plain conventional gasoline. Some use just plain conventional. Some of these cities use conventional gasoline that has a lower rate vaporization pressure, so it's conventional gasoline that doesn't evaporate too quickly, but doesn't have any special oxygen up in it. And in some of the cities with the lowest prices, will use less common blends that are more expensive to make, but they're very close to a major supply center, very close to the source of supply. And so, any outage in that particular place for special fuel isn't going to be so important because they can easily substitute from another location that uses the same fuel. Just looking in a descriptive way at the volatility of prices, we see a similar pattern. Most of the cities that have a lot of variation in the prices are cities that use special blends of fuel. And most of the cities that have a low volatility in the wholesale price of gasoline will use conventional or conventional with a lower rate vaporization pressure. Now, this is essentially our hypothesis. If we, after painting this whole landscape, what we think is that there's greater complexity, higher refining costs, higher transportation costs, higher storage costs, all because these special fuels have to be separately stored, separately separated in the pipeline. And as a result of this, if there are any supply disruptions, it's going to have a very large impact on the particular fuel where there was the disruption. And it'll have no impact on any of the other fuels. And so what we need to do is come up with some way of separating out the impact that's due to the type of fuel from the impact that's due to the geographic location of the market, right? Because all along as I've been telling you this story, these things, they're all muddled up. What explains the high prices? Well, there's just too many things, right? The city could be geographically isolated. The city could be a large market, or it could be a small market. The city could use a special fuel. It could use a conventional fuel. It could be located very close to a lot of pipeline capacity, or it could be, very far away from any pipeline capacity. So we have all these things muddled up. And so, what economists like to do when things are all muddled up is to run a regression to find a way to separate out all these effects. And so we, essentially use this, it's a fixed effects regression model. And what we do is we have data on the price of fuel at each city at each point in time. And we know all the attributes of that fuel. We know the attributes of the city. So we know how far is the city from the closest refinery that makes that fuel. Or how far away is the city to the substitute source of supply. What are all of the attributes of the fuel? So that's, does it use an oxygenate? Is it ethanol? Is it MTBE? What's the rate vaporization pressure? Things like this. So that accounts for all of the attributes of the fuel. And then we also take into account the WTI, that's the price of crude oil. We use the price of West Texas Intermediate crude oil. And then we also put in some seasonal dummy variables. Because there's a very predictable pattern to fuel prices, at least in the U.S. there is. The prices are always, they get higher when you move from the spring into the summer, and then they fall off after that. So what the regression model does is it allows us to separate out how each of these things affects the price of fuel, you know, controlling for all of the others. And in the regression model, so we have 99 cities, we have 99 cross-sections, we have data for 204 weeks, okay, so that's 204 time series observations, and it doesn't matter if this is a fixed effects regression or a random effects regression. Like if you have this many cross-sections and this many time observations, the two sets of results are almost identical. But the only time it makes any difference, really, is when you don't have many time observations. And most panel study data are like that, where you only have, you know, five or six observations at a time. So this doesn't really matter.
So let's see what we learned here. This is the price of crude oil. You know, I put it in cents per gallon, but that's the way people in North America think of gasoline prices, cents per gallon. And so this is when the price of West Texas Intermediate crude oil goes up by a penny, then the price of gasoline goes up by, you know, 1.17. So that, you know, it's bigger than one, but it's in magnitude not so much bigger than one. So that seems to make sense. And this next variable, this is the distance to the next substitute source of supply. So, you know, in our regression, this is supposed to be a proxy for how easily can you substitute away from your fuel if you have a supply disruption. And so we find here that usually units are used, the numbers are very small, but when you get the statistically significant effect. So essentially, if you're farther away from the alternative source of supply, prices in the city are going to be higher. If you use low sulfur fuel, it's going to be more expensive, 5 cents per gallon. And then these are the rate of vaporization pressures. And the lower the number, the more stringent the standard. So when the number is lower, it's more costly to avoid it. And so I would have liked it better if this number was bigger than that one. It shouldn't. But when we move from 9 to 7.8 to 7.2, eventually the number gets bigger. So that just tells us that in certain places you use RGT knowledge instead of the RGT unregulated, and it's 5 cents a gallon more. And if you use RGT 7.2, it's 9.6 cents. We have here the Fermi variable for whether or not the fuel uses ethanol. And if you're in a city that uses 5 to 5.7% ethanol, it's about 1 penny more. If you use 10% ethanol, it's about 3.6% more. So this all, you know, the magnitudes are consistent with what I said. And then for the reformulated blend for gasoline, you see the same sort of thing. It's more expensive to use reformulated gasoline. And then if the RGT is lower, the price goes up. And reformulated gasoline with ethanol, the price that changes to use that is even higher. so all of this makes sense, and it separates out the effect of, you know, the market specific effect from the fuel switching effect. And it's consistent with our idea that if the supply chain becoming more complicated, that's what's causing prices to be higher in some cities than others. Now, in this regression model, because it's a fixed effects regression, we have a fixed effects for every city, or every city minus one, for all the cities in the model. And one way of interpreting this is that this is, you know, the city-specific effect. So some cities have larger markets than other cities, and you might think that, you know, that may cause fuel prices to be higher or lower. Some cities have some, you know, geographic, you know, specific characteristics. You know, maybe one city is in a mountain range, and so when the fuel is trucked up there, it costs more. Or some other city is in a really large market and there are scale economies. Just for explanations like this, you would expect there to be some city-specific effect. And so for every city, we can estimate the city-specific effect. And the city-specific effects seem to make a lot of sense. Okay. For example,
this is supposed to be information. It has this huge positive coefficient.
So you're holding everything else equal, fuel's going to be 38 cents a gallon more. That's controlling for the distance to the refining center, controlling for everything else. These are just the geographically isolated markets. And the price in other locations will not be so high. If they're not so geographically isolated. They're generally cities that are geographically isolated. Generally, not perfectly, but generally, the cities that have the smaller coefficients are located adjacent to a lot of sources of supply. Even if the city is using a special blend of fuel. Okay. For example, cities that are in, like, in Texas on the Gulf Coast, those cities, well, even though they use special fuel, and we've controlled for that already in the regression, even though they use special fuels, their city-specific coefficient is actually very low, because they're basically, there's this sea of supply, and they're right in the middle of it. And the city with a high coefficient, they're an island out here with no supply around them. That's generally what it looks like. That's absolutely right. It's the regression model is a reduced form. The reduced form model, so this is just looking at, this is the equilibrium wholesale price. So we're explaining the equilibrium price in terms of the attributes of the city. So you're right, we don't have a demand model, and we don't have a supply model. We're only estimating the reduced form. I'm going to get to your issue in one of these slides. I'm not satisfied myself yet. But you know. This regression model is pretty robust. You know, we can estimate it in levels, in logs, fixed effects, random effects. We can control for serial correlation, for heterocadasticity, for, you know, kind of all the whistles and bells that you might want to control for, and none of the results are sensitive for that. Now, I hadn't thought to do this initially. Some referee made some complaints about our
results. And so what we did is we ran the secondary regression, and this is a regression of the city-specific effects. So these are those constants in the last regression. And we ran a regression of that on the population, on the income, and on the availability of public transit, okay, across all of these cities. So this regression, you know, has 99 observations. And so we have the fixed effect, and we're trying to explain the city fixed effect just using the attributes of the city. And so we find that, you know, cities with large populations have a smaller city-specific effect. Cities with larger incomes have a larger city-specific effect. And cities where a lot more people use public transit have a smaller city-specific effect. Unfortunately, we weren't able to sort of disaggregate the city-specific effect any more than this. But it does make sense that, you know, cities with larger populations have smaller city-specific effects. Because those cities are much more likely to have a lot more supply capacity serving them. And cities with small populations are likely to be isolated from sources of supply. But again, this isn't direct. I'm waving my hand to tell you sorry. So, to look at this, and to stand back and look at this whole thing, and say, well, there's this, you know, jurisdictional conflict. The federal government imposes one standard. Individual states are able to choose different fuels. This has resulted in this proliferation of motor fuel. And the result of this is that there's been a, you know, increase in the level of prices and an increase in the volatility of prices. And there's also been some, you know, due to this kind of inconsistent regulatory guidance, some lack of investment in refining capacity. It's very likely that this problem gets worse before it gets better. And the reason is that, you know, there's kind of new ozone standard rules, which are likely to result in more boutique fuels being produced. Currently there's a 1 hour and a 4 hour ozone standard. The 8 hour standard means that it has to meet this specification for a longer period of time. So more cities will violate the air quality standard. And so if there are more cities in violation, those cities, they either have to use the federal fuel, or they can, together with their local refiner, design a special fuel. And so more and more cities are likely to adopt special fuels instead of being able to use conventional gasoline. Now, so far, the way I've told the story, it's very charitable for the refining industry. Okay? But if you were to be less charitable, you could ask this question, you know, are the regions that use special fuels, are they being adversely selected? Okay. So let me state this in a different way. Suppose I'm a refiner, okay, and you are the local, within a state are in charge of, you know, authorizing what fuel can be used there. And I come to you and I say, instead of using the federal blend of gasoline, why don't I design a special blend of gasoline just for your state? And the reason I want to do this for you is it costs me less to make it. And so if my cost is lower, I can sell it to customers at a lower price. And so you, as the regulator, well, why are you going to say no? You know, you shouldn't object to my wanting to produce gasoline that costs less, right? And so if on the surface, everything was fine, okay? But let's say I, in the refining industry, that I have a bunch of refineries all around the country. And for your city, I design a special blend of fuel that your city uses. And then when I go to your city, I design a different special blend for your city. Okay? And then for your city, I design another special blend. Well, then you might think, maybe I'm doing something very strategic. I'm designing the market so that if there's a supply disruption to your city, your price goes up, and the fuel I make for you can't be used to satisfy the supply disruption. And so the refining industry might be, doing this strategically, because it's a way of increasing the profitability of the refining industry by designing special fuels. Okay? It's not that they cost less. That's not why the refiner really wants to do it. But they want to create this lack of fungibility between fuels. Now, this is what I think is really interesting, and I'm just starting to study this. And this isn't part of this paper, because it's very complicated to try to study this. But basically, they're kind of creating some monopoly power within each of the regions to use as a special fuel, rather than having one big homogeneous competitive refining market. Another thing that is related to this, you could ask is, if this is really the case, that the refiners are doing this, and any benefits that come from this are just extra profit for the refiner, maybe it would be better for the federal government to just impose the standard. Every city that doesn't meet the air quality standard has to use one fuel. Okay, you can impose that standard. There's a couple of other people that have studied this reformulated gasoline market, and that's their conclusion. And I would say that it probably makes more sense to use a few boutique fuels, but not to use them so that there's this complete lack of substitution. Okay. So in this, there are a number of things that are kind of to be done. I mean, most of what I presented today, it was just published in the Energy Journal. But we need to kind of refine the model and, kind of put in the number of supply options, some better measure of fungibility. And in particular,
we really need to have a structural model and take into account, how refiners are actually behaving. And what I've done here today, I just used this reduced form regression. But what I really need to do is to have a structural model that captures the supply behavior of each of the refiners. And I've had an ongoing project where we're getting data at the refinery level so we can have this kind of a behavioral model that takes into account exactly how the refiners choose to produce their slate of products and then how much they produce. And so, the policy implication that came out of this is that, that from our perspective, having a single blend of gasoline is feasible. That's clearly not the least costly way to meet the air quality standards. But having a small number of regional blends probably makes sense. Okay. And it would also make sense if the federal regulator, before they gave states permission to use a special blend of fuel, took into account not only the air quality implications, but the implications on the price. Right? If they use a special blend of fuel and it makes that city geographically, makes that city isolated from other sources of supply, then maybe they shouldn't allow that city or that region to use that particular type of fuel. And that's what I have to say about this.
Thank you. Do you like to ask any questions? Or like to ask for some, give any comments? it's about the United States that may perhaps we're not very familiar to, but if these were Thailand's provinces, you might be more familiar to and maybe some more comments. I just have some observations that you tried to talk about the explanation of the crisis. But I just wonder whether these boutique rules can successfully reduce pollution or improve the air quality. Is there any literature that...
The science is clear. Yeah, I mean, before these fuels were ever introduced, I mean, they clearly reduce emissions a lot. And it, you know, mobile source emissions are, in North America anyway, I know, they're very important. And I would guess that in the developing world, mobile source emissions are going to become increasingly important. Right? I mean, if everyone in China had a motorcycle today, their level of pollution would go up dramatically. Right? Not to mention the demand for fuel. So I mean, if the level of income in the developing world increases, especially in China, I mean, you could expect that vehicular emissions are going to become a bigger fraction of overall emissions.
If that happens, that means when environmentally aspect, this is good, but it seems that when you look at the evidence, it seems that a number of factors have finally produced a higher price of the gasoline. For example, you talk about ethanol and a number of factors that increase the prices. And I still believe that people respond to the price. Price still signals the market. If the price is higher, how can U.S. Congress encourage people to use this kind of fuel when price
is
higher?
Much of this is mandated. It's sort of I believe in Thailand, it was only recently that unleaded fuel was completely mandated.
Right.
And so, I mean, up until a certain point in time, consumers had a choice, right? They could buy leaded fuel, which was less costly, or they could buy unleaded and pay more. And so a lot of motorists probably always bought the leaded fuel.
So that's the regulation.
So this is sort of the federal government can mandate a minimum standard for the fuel. And so that part has to be mandated by the government. Because if there were open competition, it would be a race to the bottom, and only the cheapest fuel would ever be made.
So the bottom line of this paper is saying that, okay, it's got to be regulated, kind of.
That part's, I think, given. But it's if you just let everyone in this decentralized way, just the way the institutions evolved, we ended up in a bad equilibrium. And so we could look at this and say, well, how do we redesign the rules so that we get the good equilibrium and not the bad equilibrium. Okay. I mean, that's my way of looking at it. I actually think that the refiners, the people that are in the refining industry, they know a lot more about it than I ever will. And they've got to be very strategic and very good at identifying ways to increase their margins. It's a very tough industry to be in. And, in the U.S., and I have to believe that they're adversely selecting the places where they introduce special fuels. That it makes it less costly for them, but it increases the average price. But if one knows if the volatility of price increases, the profit of the refiner is going to increase, right? Because the costs are convex. And so I would think that the refiners have to be aware of this.
So in that case, if it happens in Thailand or in other developing countries, I believe that government needs to set some subsidies to, at least at first. Do you have any opinion on that? If we like to encourage people to use this kind of high cost fuels, governments may have to give some subsidy to, before they put the mandate. I mean, at the same time, if they put the mandate, right? But on the other hand, developing and developed countries are different. So
I'm very much a, you know, old-fashioned Chicago-type economist. So I would never encourage subsidies for most things. But I would say that it makes sense if you're in a region that's reasonably homogeneous to have a single standard for the fuel. And if you're in, if you have a few separate regions that have different air quality needs, that you want to have as few fuels as possible. I don't know where the refining capacity is here in Thailand. I mean, it's clearly a net importer of oil, and I don't know if the oil is imported and refined, or if it's refineries in Singapore, because that's the net exporter in the region. If Singapore exports here. But it's likely the case that here, there's probably, you know, very few external sources of supply. And so it doesn't, you know, it would make sense to just have a homogeneous standard in the country. But in a place like the U.S., there are many, many separate refiners. And each refiner, their refinery is configured differently. And the refinery has different inputs of oil. And it turns out that, like, oil that comes from the Alaskan North Slope is very, very heavy, and the products that you make from that, or that you would want to make from that, are different from the products you would make from Brent's Blend or from West Texas Intermediate. And so, I mean, this is the reason why that there's such a diversity in the refineries across the U.S. But I believe that if the refiners all had the same input of crude oil, things would be much easier. But I would say, if you're in a country that largely imports the finished product, then it clearly makes sense to have a single standard for the fuel, because you want the wholesale market to be more competitive, you want to be thicker, right, if you're a net buyer of the fuel. And so the trend policy implication would just be that you want to have a single standard for the fuel. But I don't think subsidizing the use of crude oil-based products is a sensible thing myself. With $100 a barrel of crude oil, I if anything, I would predict that the many countries, and there are many countries in Asia that actually subsidize refined products, if I were to predict anything, it would be that I'll bet these subsidies get smaller. Because with $100 a barrel of crude oil, a lot of governments are going to want to spend more on something else instead of spending more of the government surplus so that people can drive their cars more.
If the size of that subsidy is declining, but well, anyway, they're still in the interest of Thailand. Rich, do you have any questions, any ideas? Any comments? Yeah? So I'd like to say thanks, okay, if you have no comments. Thanks very much, Professor Wald. Actually, this is his third time of presenting a paper here at Summertime. He received it once a year, right? I think that's just one, maybe a couple months in the future, he might be here again for this kind of seminar or some kind of lectures. Anyway, thank you very much, and hope that you can continue a lot of your work you just listed in the previous slide. Lots of work is still waiting for you. And if anyone here are interested in getting your paper, you know how? Can you tell us how to get or download the paper from the Witch Guy? Okay. Is it www.nana? Okay. Pareto.uk. Wait, is it your own website? I have a computer. Okay. Okay, right.
Even when I'm traveling, like if I'm in Hong Kong, I just have a terminal window on my laptop
uh-huh.
and work on my my server.
Oh.
My web pages, all my data.
Okay. So you can visit the pareto.ugallery.ca. Okay. And I think for today, thank you very much again, and hope to have you here again next time.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. แล้วหนึ่งไปไหนอ่ะเดี๋ยวก็ไม่ใช่หนึ่งไปไหนให้พี่บุ๋ยดูเดี๋ยว